a voice you know from a dozen consecutive top 10 R&B hits, 5 gold singles, 3 gold albums, and one of the most distinctive voices in music history, Russell Tompkins Jr. Oh, you know that voice so well, and he joins us this afternoon from Philadelphia, his longtime home. Russell, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
And I don't know if you're a sports fan, but if you are, boy, the Eagles got it bad from the officials in that game.
Well, I'm a Cowboy fan.
Oh, my goodness. How does that play in Philly?
Kind of rough sometimes.
Well, Russell, you have had such an incredible career, and music has always been a part of your life. You grew up in a musical family. Your dad was a singer, right?
Yes, he was. Yes.
And you grew up listening to a whole lot of different influences, but I know there was a lot of jazz in the house, and I've always felt that I hear a little bit of a Billy Eckstein influence there.
Oh, yes. Well, that was my father's favorite, and he became one of mine. He played a lot of Billy Eckstein, and he sang a lot of Eckstein also. Whenever I hear his name, I had a chance to meet him. I went to one of his last shows he ever done in Atlantic City, and I got a chance to sit in the dressing room and have a conversation with him and explain to him how I knew him, and I was very surprised that he knew me.
Oh, that's wonderful. When did you know? Now, you were singing a lot in glee clubs and at school. When did you know you had this this amazing tenor voice and then the ability to hit that magical falsetto?
Well, I sang naturally high from elementary school all the way into the time I joined the Philadelphia All-City Choir when I was in junior high school. But I guess it was around, I don't know, going into high school that my voice started to change. And I was becoming a baritone, and I still wanted to sing tenor. So it just, all of a sudden, I would hear music and could make my voice go and do whatever I heard. I would listen to Temptations. I would listen to Smokey Robinson. And I just had the ability to sound like them, or even, when I fell in love listening to Dionne Warwick's music and Morgana King, I used to look at all the TV shows that, the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers type of things with the sopranos singing in them. And my voice, I just could do it. And I began to develop that type of voice until I could make it my own identity.
We have been fortunate to have the great Dionne Warwick on our show a couple of times, and I think I caught an interview where you said not a day goes by when you don't at some point in the day find yourself singing a Dionne Warwick song.
Oh, it's always going on in my mind. It's ever since I was a teenager, and I listen to it. Everyone has a certain music that they listen to. They might like a whole lot of different types of music, but there's always this one type of song or one type of person that when you're feeling sad or you're feeling happy that you like to put on. And for me, it's her.
Well, I know you love those songs, especially the collaboration she had with Burt Bacharach and Hal David. And we lost Burt Bacharach at 94 last week, and you had a chance to work quite a bit with Burt Bacharach as well. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, that was a dream come true. That was a really, really wonderful. After working with Tommy Bell, working with him, if I hadn't worked with Tommy Bell first or sang the Dionne Warwick songs all my life, I wouldn't have been able to work with Burt. But it was like everything I did before that was preparing me to go in the studio and work with Burt Bacharach. I think he felt that also.
We're talking with Russell Tompkins Jr. here on Downtown. So let me see if I've got the timeline right. You were in high school, Benjamin Franklin High School, and there were a couple of vocal groups there. You were in the Monarchs. There was a talent competition, and you won, but eventually a teacher decided to take the best members of both groups and turn it into what became the Stylistics.
You're right, except for one thing. I didn't go to Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay.
No, I went to an agricultural school on the outskirts of Philadelphia, and all the other guys that were in the group, they went to Benjamin Franklin.
Okay.
But we lived in the same neighborhood. So whenever I would get out of school, I would end up going down to Benjamin Franklin High School and hanging out with them and singing. And until we end up forming the Stylistics. And the talent show was there. And a lot of my first management was there also. But I was there so much, I might as well have went.
And you had a plan, and it wasn't necessarily was to be in the music business, but perhaps not as a singer. I think I remember reading that you had planned to repair musical instruments for a living.
That was a further education plan. I had a guy in my classroom when I was in high school that was a year ahead of me. And I really didn't know what I was going to do after high school. You know, I didn't know if I was going to sing. I didn't know if I was going to go into service. I really had no plan. I wasn't going on to further, you know, education. But he went to a vocational school that was in Philadelphia, and he was studying to do musical instruments. And, it hit me. That sounds like something I would like to do. And I went down, and I took the test, and I passed the test. And I went for about almost a year. This was a two-year course, and then you had to go into a six-year apprenticeship. And for someone who was 17 years old, that seemed like a lifetime.
Well, and it wasn't long after that that you found yourself on the R&B charts with a top 10 hit first time out with You're a Big Girl Now.
Yeah, I started doing different jobs all over here in Philadelphia. But on the weekends, the same group, the Stylistics, we would work at nightclubs here in Philly. My mother knew a guy who owned one of the nightclubs here in Philly, and he gave us an audition. And we went in there, and next thing I know, we were working there almost every weekend. And some people here in Philadelphia came down and heard us at the club and wanted to record us. And we went in and made a recording, and after that, I didn't think nothing else about it. I went right back to work, kept on singing every weekend. And the management at that time said that he had an engagement for us up in Newport, Rhode Island. But we would have to quit our jobs and quit going to school or whatever the rest of the guys were doing and go up there and work. We had to make a decision, would we do that? And we did. We all decided that we would quit our jobs or whatever and go to Newport, Rhode Island and work. And during the two-week period that we were there, our friends and family came up to see us. And they said, y'all got a hit record in Philadelphia. They're playing it all day long on all the radio stations. And that started everything off. The records started to go to New York, New Jersey, into Maryland, Delaware, and work just started to spread out. And AFCO Embassy Records wanted to pick us up to do a further recording. And that's part of the history.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you get together for the first time with Tom Bell?
The people at AFCO Embassy said, I want you to be down at the Schubert Building on a Monday to meet this guy named Tom Bell, and he's going to be your next producer. And what a lot of people don't know is that the other guys in the Stylistics didn't sing on any of the recordings that we recorded.
Right.
Tom Bell, the first three albums. But it was just me. I went down there and I met Tommy, and Linda Creed was there. And I had done a gig while we were the Monarchs at a cabaret in Philadelphia in my last year in high school. And Linda was on that gig, so I had met her already. And that broke the ice a little bit, you know, went in and started working with Tommy, and she was the lyricist and singing the songs, and they were teaching me, and we really gelled. It seemed, you know, everything was like fate.
And very sad that we lost both Tom and Linda in the past year, and they were such a talented pair, the work they did with you, but for so many other Philadelphia-based artists.
Yes, it's really a bad time this time right now, because 2 months ago, the very first record I did, You're a Big Girl Now, the producer of that, Leon Mitchell, he passed away. He was in his 80s, and then 2 months afterwards, Tommy Bell passes away. Tommy Bell was 79, and then it's been another almost 2 months now. Bert passes away, and he's 94. And, you know, it's like, wow, what's happening? All my people are just going to the wayside.
Very sad indeed.
But, yeah, it's very sad, but they all had, you know, I wouldn't say they passed too soon, because who knows what time you're supposed to go, but they all lived very wonderful, creative lives.
Well, no question about that, and your work with them took the stylistics to new heights. You Are Everything just blew up across all formats, R&B, pop. That song was everywhere on the radio.
Yes, When I first went in the studio to record with Tommy, I did Stop, Look, and Listen. And Stop, Look, and Listen really set it up. And then when You're Everything, You're Everything started to push us, and people started to hear us. And the phenomenal thing about Tommy's music, it was a worldwide phenomenon. I mean, it was being played everywhere.
Did I read somewhere that Betcha by Golly Wow is your favorite stylistic song to perform?
Yes, it is. It's always been my favorite since the first time I heard it. And evidently to a lot of other artists. It's been done by about 16 different artists. My favorite, is Phyllis Hyman. I love to hear Phyllis Hyman sing Betcha by Golly Wow. And the other one is the jazz song the jazz artists seem to gravitate to is People Make the World Go Round.
Oh, absolutely. Well, in the midst of all of this success with records and radio and live appearances, I remember very vividly seeing you and the Stylistics on television, in particular the Midnight Special. That had to be fun, but I imagine too a little bit scary for a young guy.
No, by that time I was starting to come into knowing that I was a road musician, and knowing that, you know, being on the road was something that I knew of. I never depended on recordings. Your money is sketchy. You don't know what the record company is going to do. I've been very fortunate enough to work with a record company that's been kind of true to what they said they would do when I signed the recording. But by Midnight Special, I had done so many songs. I had traveled all over the country with James Brown. And you do get a little bit more jitters when you know the camera is on you. But once the music starts playing and you hit the first couple of bars, a lot of that nervousness goes away. But nervousness is a good thing. I used to get really, really nervous, and I met Sammy Davis Jr. once, and I asked Sammy, I said, what can I do to get rid of this stage fright? He said, don't worry about it. In the long run, you'll be able to control it, because stage fright only means that you care about what you're doing.
Midnight Special, too, if I remember, was a little different than a lot of the shows at the time, because you were actually singing live. It wasn't lip-synced.
Yeah, it was like a gig. It had an audience out there, the stage, except for if you took the cameras away, it would have just been another big gig.
Is it true that the record company didn't want to release You Make Me Feel Brand New as a single?
Yes, that is true. Why? To this day, I don't know why. But they had put out other songs before that, and we liked You Make Me Feel Brand New, so we started to sing it. And the people were going crazy over it, and we kept telling the record company and telling them and telling them, and they finally listened and put it out. And it became the biggest record that we ever made.
You also had success in Europe as well, especially in the UK, a number one song in the United Kingdom in 1975 with Can't Give You Anything.
Yes, yes. Can't Give You Anything was a departure from the type of love songs and things that we had been doing. And it was a sample of things to come for Van McCoy.
Absolutely. Who had the hustle.
If you listen to that song and listen to Do the Hustle, it's almost like the same type of music. You know, that it's a Van McCoy song. And it worked good for us, and it worked phenomenally for him.
Mm. You eventually left the Stylistics and went out on your own. You, among other things, I understand, learned to play the piano, released a wonderful solo album in 02, A Matter of Style, and then put together a brand new group, the New Stylistics. Can you tell us about them?
Well, they're guys, you know, this is still homebred. One of the guys was in the Stylistics from 1982 to about 93, 94. He's from the neighborhood. He sings with me now in the New Stylistics. And another guy that was in a group that that I had managed for a while back then from my neighborhood, he's in the group. We had four members, and one of the guys retired not too long ago. And I grew up with him also, James Ranton. And when I left the group, I had no idea that I was going to be singing anymore. I was totally burnt out. I was burnt out mentally, physically. And so when I left there, I just couldn't do nothing. So I went back to school. I went to music school. And a friend of mine who worked for the record company the last record company I was with, Amherst Records, he wanted me to record a song that he had. And at first I didn't want to do it. And he said, look, I'll tell you what I do. I'll buy you the equipment you put in your house. I'll send you the tracks, and you can record it anytime you want to. And that ended up being 16 songs. So that's how the Matter of Style album came out. But when the Matter of Style album came out, I had to do promotion on it, and a lot of the guys that are in the group right now kept coming to me to form a new group. So I just said yes. And this is the 20th year that we've been together as the New Stylistics.
Well, you sound great. New album, well, relatively new album. You released a couple of years ago, Between Love Songs. It's got some terrific music on that. I caught a clip last night. I was on the internet and caught a clip of you singing Don't Worry Baby with Brian Wilson and his group, and man, you sounded great on that.
Oh, we had a good time. I loved them guys. You know, when I was talking when I was younger and I was trying to learn how to sing falsetto and things, the Beach Boys were hot. And I loved the Beach Boys. I mean, I was crazy about the two white groups that I was crazy about back then was the Beach Boys and Frankie Valli the Four Seasons. And I said to myself, I can sing them songs. And I remember it was crazy. When I heard that I was going to sing with Brian Wilson, I was here practicing in the house the songs that I was going to sing with him. And while I was playing them, my wife said, you know, that guy sounds an awful lot like you. I said, no, it's the other way around. I sound an awful lot like him. Brian Wilson had a phenomenal tenor back then. And that was a great show working with them. And when they come back east, I hope I can get a chance to do it again with them.
Well, I think your wife is right, because I don't think anybody sounds like you, Russell. One of the most original and recognizable voices in music, Russell Tompkins Jr. I have enjoyed your work since the very beginning of the Stylistics and right up to now. It's great to have the chance to talk with you, and so happy that you're out there continuing to make wonderful music.
Oh, thank you so much. need to talk to somebody up there where you at to see if they want to bring us up there and do a little singing with for y'all. I would love to come up there. I've been everywhere all over the country except for where you are, except for in Maine.
Well, we'd love to have you up here. No question about that. We'll see if we can get the wheels turning on that. In the meantime, Russell, thank you so much for visiting with us today, and I wish you much good health and continued success.
It's been my pleasure, and thank you so much for having me again.
That is the great Russell Tompkins, Jr. with us on Downtown.